The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to The Dan Proft Show. I'm John Hinderacher from Powerline, filling in for Dan tonight. And we are joined now by James Bovard. James is the author of 10 books. He's a member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, a frequent contributor to The Hill, and a contributing editor for American Conservative. Jim, thanks for being on the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Jim, I want to start out today talking about your piece, Pandemic Follies, Tyranny Won't Keep Us Safe, published by the Future of Freedom Foundation. And I think, you know, you begin this piece by pointing out that the shutdowns that have been adopted in states around the country, ostensibly to combat the COVID epidemic, have wound up doing more harm than the disease. Talk about that a bit, if you would.
Well, there, from the start of the pandemic, there were a lot of people who said that if the government just, you know, basically punishes people harder, then we'll all be safe. There was a basically blind faith in the government, iron fist. A lot of states had very severe shutdowns. Some of them are putting them back in. They managed to destroy more than 13 million jobs. But in spite of all the sacrifices, more than 200,000 Americans have still died from the virus. Many of them being older folks in nursing homes, that were killed in part because of government mandates to that nursing homes had to admit COVID patients in New York, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere. But part of what concerned me from the start was that, you know, you had politicians that simply had some numbers, and they would have a shaky estimate. Well, if the infection rate continues, then we're all going to die. So therefore, we've got to put everybody under house arrest. You know, Trump's Attorney General Bill Barr had a great line. He said that the house arrest orders are the biggest civil liberties violation in American history, except for slavery. And it's ironic to see a lot of the folks who would normally be all in favor of civil liberties on the other side of the barricades cheering on the idea of government locking people up in their houses and treating anyone who steps out like a criminal.
Jim, it's amazing to me. Until this happened, I never would have dreamed that the governor of an American state could literally issue an executive order, as in my state, Minnesota, requiring all residents of the state to stay in their houses except as allowed out by order of the governor. It's unbelievable to me that happened.
Well, and part of what is fascinating in a dark comedy kind of way is that there's been so little controversy about the civil liberties violations. Actually, I should qualify that because there have been a lot of individuals who've tried to raise hell on this, but with the mainstream media, there has been a tendency to have contempt for people that criticize the lockdowns as people who do not believe in science. But the science isn't clear here. I mean, there are scientists who have pointed out that the lockdowns have not worked, that Sweden has done a lot better than many of the other European countries that did impose lockdowns. Some of the states that did not impose lockdowns are doing better than the ones that did. And it's a radical change in treatment of a pandemic to try to lock everybody in their house. Part of what confounds me is that how the media and so many of the politicians have just swept aside all of the collateral damage from these lockdowns. I mean, it's horrendous as far as the impact on students being prohibited from going to school, and the politicians are pretending, well, we have distance learning. Well, they know that's a bunch of crap, especially for low-income households that might not have Wi-Fi or high-speed internet or even a computer. And yet we're supposed to pretend that all these sacrifices are justified and necessary, and anyone who protests is a bad person.
Yeah, and one aspect of this is that the shutdowns have been easiest on public employees who get paid anyway, and knowledge workers who can work from home on their laptops, right? And as you point out in your article here, almost 40% of households earning less than $40,000 a year have someone who's lost his job. That's where the burden has really fallen.
Right. But these are folks that much of the media simply doesn't care about. I mean, they're happy to have their votes when it's time to try to topple Trump, but otherwise it's like, there is such a disdain for the lower income folks, the folks who have to go to work at their restaurant or have to go to work at the gas station, wherever. There's a very clear split here in my county, Montgomery County, Maryland, where the county executive and council just imposed very strict lockdowns again. The eastern part of the county is largely Hispanic, Black, lower income, and most of the counties affluent and white. It's not the folks in the lower income part who are pushing for the lockdowns and the restrictions and destroying their jobs. These are the folks who are out busting their tail to try to cover their rent. But it doesn't matter to the folks who have the government jobs, a lot of government contractors as well here, paid very well for sitting at home, and I see them out walking on the street all the time with their dogs. It's like, this is a real hardship time for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Another thing has happened, certainly in my state and I think across the country, is that thousands of small businesses have been destroyed. Well, at the same time, Target, Costco, Home Depot, Total Wine, they're all open. They're all open because they were declared essential, while small businesses are being crushed. And again, it seems to be more of a political judgment, certainly, than a scientific one.
Absolutely. And it's heart-wrenching to see so many individuals, men and women who spent their lives to build up a business, and then the government comes along and totally arbitrary decree and says, no, we've decided that you're not safe enough, but, Target, other places, oh, sure, keep them open. But it's been disconcerting to me because I've joked in the past that many Americans would not care about the loss of freedom unless the government tried to take their guns and shut down their churches. Well, the government has shut down the churches, and there has been some pushback, but actually a lot less than I would have expected. And the level of hypocrisy, I mean, it's fine to have your massive protests there in Minnesota over the George Floyd death, and you had the massive celebrations here in the Washington, D.C. area after the election. Those are fine. But, to let the politicians have unlimited power to dictate when people can have freedom of association, it's a complete travesty of the Bill of Rights.
One of the things I love about your piece called Pandemic Follies is you analogize it to The Three Musketeers, one of my favorite books when I was a kid. Cardinal Richelieu gave one of his agents a letter that said, "The bearer of this letter has acted under my orders and for the good of the state." And so that letter was carte blanche to commit any crime, to commit murder, whatever. And Cardinal Richelieu had endorsed it as being for the good of the state. It was really chilling. But that's kind of what we're seeing here. I mean, every violation of the most fundamental civil liberties, the right of association, the right to go to church, you name it, all justified. It's all supposedly in the name of science and for the good of the state.
Yeah, it's a profound flaw in our current political system is that the politicians and government officials who made these dictates and did all this damage will have no liability. I mean, at worst, they might not get reelected, or some of them might end up having to resign, but unlikely. Instead, much of the media has treated people like Michigan Governor Whitmer as a hero. Same with Oregon Kate Brown. I mean, Whitmer, for instance, prohibited anybody from leaving their house to visit family or friends. It was bizarre. And Michigan still has gotten walloped, typical, so much of the problem in Michigan was in the Detroit area and that broader area, but they devastated upstate Michigan for no good reason.
we've had the worst of both worlds. We've had the loss of civil liberties that wasn't even effective. As you said earlier, yes. There's been no apparent correlation between the shutdowns that have been entered and actually containing the spread of the virus.
Yeah, and there have not, partly because the media has been cheering on these ineffective policies. You have one of Biden's top advisors yesterday talking about, perhaps what we should do is impose a total national lockdown for 4 to 6 weeks, and that will solve the problem. And it's like, folks last week were not voting for a dictator. Or at least they were told they weren't voting for a dictator. But where the president could get this authority, some Biden advisor was saying, well, it's from the general welfare clause of the Constitution. Well, then let's just throw out, let's be honest and throw out the rest of the Constitution.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And by the way, the idea that the general welfare clause somehow, justifies any order that anyone might choose to enter, is ridiculous. We're talking with James Bovard. We'll be back with more with James after these messages.
Political fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to The Dan Proft Show. We are talking with James Bovard. And Jim, I want to move on in this segment and talk about another one of your pieces, although it does tie in with the conversation we were having before that break. And this is one that you've got in the American Institute for Economic Research website titled Elections and Legitimacy. And it's interesting that in the context of the 2020 election, which has been hotly disputed, there's been a lot of talk about legitimacy. But as you point out in this article, election legitimacy is an issue that's been with us for a while.
Yeah, I mean, this is the fourth election since 2000 that has been marred by either widespread allegations of voter fraud or foreign interference. Politicians and the pundits talk about, someone won the election, therefore they are a legitimate ruler. But there are more and more questions about the legitimacy of who wins elections. Going back to 2000, there was a fierce dispute in Florida between Al Gore and George W. Bush. That's something that the Supreme Court basically intervened on. It said, told Florida to stop counting votes because it would be difficult to sustain the confidence in the outcome of the election. Well, this is that's not a good reason to stop counting votes. I mean, and it's the same choice that we're probably going to face in the next coming weeks as far as trying to validate the votes by which Joe Biden won. 4 years later, you had Ohio, fierce disputes about some voting software that was used there, and Democrats made allegations that George W. Bush had won solely because of that, by cheating. There was a lot of sparks flying briefly. People forgotten that. 4 years ago, you had the media and the Democrats claiming that Russia had helped Trump steal the election. You had Trump's entire first term and entire presidency shadowed by this special counsel that finally concluded that there was no evidence of collusion, but that served to taint his entire presidency and helped the Democrats capture the House in 2018 and probably undermined Trump's candidacy this year. There have been so many allegations of misconduct in elections, and yet we're still told that whoever wins the election has the will of the people and the consent of the governed, and this is a fairy tale at this point.
Well, you make the observation in this article. I'll just quote you here: this year's presidential election may be the most fraud-ridden event since 1876. When four states had disputed results and Congress gave the presidency to Republican Rutherford Hayes.
Yeah, I mean, the simple fact of relying on mail-in voting in a massive way, New York Times 8 years ago said that fraud in voting by mail is vastly more prevalent than in-person voting fraud. How much more obvious could you get? However, it was all swept under the rug. So, I think there's going to be a whole lot more fraud this year than normally. I don't know how much of it will be exposed. I also don't know if there was enough fraud to change the result of the election. But I was amused by the banner New York Times headline yesterday, front page. It says, the New York Times check with election officials, no fraud anywhere. And it's like, yeah, well, that's reassuring. I mean, it's amazing how far the media is scrambling to try to bury the notion of any fraud in this election.
Well, the media plus social media, if you mention voter fraud Facebook, you're deep sixed. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You make a really interesting observation, though, James, and I want to talk about this a little bit. You write, perhaps the real problem with the current American political system is that elections are practically the last remaining source of apparent legitimacy. Presidents take an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. But this has long been a non-binding throwaway gesture. I think that's a really interesting point. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, the core idea of the U.S. government was that voters would choose who would follow the law and uphold the Constitution. But what we've had in recent decades, actually probably going back to Franklin Roosevelt and Turbo times, was that the president was assumed to be entitled to all the power that he claimed to need to do what's good for the country. And so the thing that we're getting is presidents who become elective dictators. And this has been a problem with both parties. And because of that, the Constitution can no longer validate the system, because if the president is going to violate the Americans' constitutional rights, then what did we vote for? I mean, what's the point of voting if we're just choosing who's going to trample our rights? But this is something that the media tend to sweep under the ground. This is a sweep under the rug. If you look at Joe Biden's record, I mean, his most famous utterance when he was a senator was lock the SOBs up. He was always pushing for new laws that trampled the Bill of Rights. His foreign policy, he's talking about getting tough with Syria. How many Syrians did people vote to kill on election day? Most people weren't aware of that, but Biden could have a far more aggressive foreign policy. He has an advisor talking about national shutdown. Where did the president get the power for these kind of things? And it's basically pulled out of a hat and given to him by the media and his political allies and a docile judges. But this is unsustainable for a system, especially at a time when only 20% of Americans now trust the government to do the right thing most of the time. And this is from a poll before the election. Right now, it's probably quite a bit less than 20%.
It's amazing how we keep giving more and more power to institutions and people that we don't trust. Someday maybe the conflict, the contradiction is going to get recognized. But I want to go back to a point you made, and we talked about it briefly in the last segment as well. Biden has talked about maybe ordering a national shutdown of most economic and social activity and a national mask mandate. Now, where in the Constitution is there even the glimmer of executive power to issue any such order?
Well, that's a great question. And, I don't expect to see that discussed in a New York Times editorial because there is so much fear which has been fed by Biden. Biden in the campaign would often exaggerate the number of people that have died from COVID by 100 or 1,000 fold. If it's once or twice, okay, it's a slip of the tongue like he often did, but there was a constant vast exaggeration of the toll. He was campaigning on fear, and I would not be surprised if he tries to exploit that fear to seize far more power. However, if he does impose a national lockdown, it would destroy whatever figment of legitimacy that he will have in January.
Yeah, I think if you look back through human history at where tyranny comes from, I mean, most tyrannies grow out of alleged emergencies, right? I mean, there's always an emergency, and this COVID one, frankly, is not that much of an emergency. It's got a 99.7% survival rate. This is not the Black Death, and yet it's the pretense for taking away our rights.
Well, yeah, and you have politicians exploiting that. If memory serves, there was a council out in the Bay Area in San Francisco, which dictated that it was going to follow up on the COVID shutdown rules by forcing people to work at home 3 days a week in order to fight climate change. And it's like, okay, so this is a heck of a domino that's falling. And if politicians can get away with lockdowns for COVID, then what are they going to add to the list?
James Wovard, thank you very much for being with us on the Dan Proft Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Podcast of the show at danproftshow.com.